Welcome back to Maplewood Barn Radio Theater, brought to you every Friday evening through the courtesy of KBIA. Tonight, we bring you an old-fashioned yarn meant to caution unwary young ladies against the dangers of the big city. Said the Spider to the Fly was adapted for radio by Dave Collins from a Suzanne Buck short story that originally appeared in the All-Star Weekly of September 15th, 1917. So, grab the popcorn and feel free to hiss at the villain and cheer for the hero and heroine as we turn the microphone over to our storyteller.
In the ocean of New York, there is one stream which carries on its daylight current the fresh and healthy tide of its humanity, Fifth Avenue. Another current bears the dregs of what was once too fresh and healthy. This is Sixth. They never intersect these streets, yet on Broadway, another parallel, both currents meet and mingle in the great strong wash which sweeps beneath the arc lights. On Broadway is the Hotel Blaine, rich, ostentatious, and exclusive, yet free to anyone who bears unfurled the standard of the dollar. In the lobby of the Blaine and tucked away into a corner stands the Western Amalgamated Telegraph Service booth, a circular enclosure with a counter made of marble. This marble of the counter is the same as that which makes the hotel's three huge Doric columns and the figures posed in unexpected niches high along the walls, figures which from cone-shaped fingertips shed light to lend aesthetic presence to the glare from voltage hidden. There, Miss McNulty, telegraph operator, her elbows crossed upon the counter, trained sky-blue eyes upon the shifting crowd. Her blouse was white. Her hair was black. Her whole appearance ordinary. But her eyes were deep. Those eyes, half-veiled, betrayed her for philosopher and secret analyst. At Miss McNulty's side, Tom Dillon, house detective, product of old Ireland, and a master tailor, leaned his broad, tall, dinner-coated self a little closer to the girl.
I'm going to chuck this job someday. It's getting on my nerves. You feel the same?
Not me. Try to pry me loose from mine. Tom, turn your lamps on that bunch there and tell me if you find one missing from the cast. We got 'em all, I tell you. Say, wouldn't you prefer to be right here than down front at the best show in the burg? Well, look there. That woman's waiting for a man and praying that he don't show up. Look there. That one is waiting, waiting, waiting like a hawk for anyone to start her way. We certainly have got 'em all here, Tom. The man, his wife, the fellow with the other fellow's wife, the youngster spending father's money, and father running close behind his boy. Funny how they work so hard to show themselves this large-sized time. These days, the old man beats his son out of a slice of the inheritance, you bet. Just lamp the bunch around the room clerk's desk. That traveling salesman's just come in. He'll make a splurge with money from the firm. I tell you, Tom, all jokes aside, no other first-class house gets quite the mixed crowd we get here.
It's dancing, does it? Dancing, Nell. It's dancing every afternoon and evening 3 years now, and nothing like a let-up yet in sight. The hoofers never seem to tire. You know that any place permits the light fantastics got 'em coming from the corners of the earth. Time was when this was one exclusive coupe, but now all you need to take you by is one dress suit. I tell you, kiddo, both the Bowery and Sixth Avenue is in here strong right now, but they all look like Fifth, and we can't tell the difference. It's makeup, kiddo, makeup. An even dozen buncoed again this week. And nothing but the dance to blame. These million-dollar babies blow in here afternoons and dance with men they never met before. You bet they wander home shy in a rock or two, and men who ought to know a whole lot better stake some guileless-looking kitty to the eats and find themselves apart from their fat rolls. Still, they don't dare to make a howl. They never help us out. We spotters got to work alone.
He moved away as two men and a woman, coming one behind the other, bent above the counter. Miss McNulty took her place down at the key, her eyes and forehead only showing now above her desk. The men wrote rapidly, then paid the tolls and walked away. The woman lingered. Right above the counter, she showed tall and slim, yet immature, enveloped in a film of pretty clothes, developed only insofar as years had brought her growth. Her brown eyes showed the courage of her unsophistication. Miss McNulty bored her through with penetrating eyes. That girl, who writing hard with rigid wrist, was knitting brows in painful, concentrative effort.
Brand new fish and brand new water. Need my help?
Oh, thanks. I have one telegram all finished now, but I must write another. One is going to my married sister in Johnsonville, Ohio, telling her I got here safe and have a lovely room with three big, lovely windows and a bath. Isn't this a big hotel? I never saw one like it in my life.
Of course you didn't. Not in Johnsonville, Ohio. Hotel Blaine is pretty near the biggest in New York.
It is right pretty, this here place, New York. I just love the noise and the rush. There's so much life. I didn't know which way to turn when I got to the depot, so I took a taxi cab and asked for any big hotel.
You like New York?
I love it.
Been here long?
An hour. That's the reason for these telegrams, you see. Of course, I feel a little lonesome yet, but that'll wear away.
The girl looked wistfully at the couples moving on the dance floor in the ballroom. Then her glance moved to a boy and a girl on one of the hotel settees, their faces almost close enough for a kiss, as they whispered sweet nothings.
No one has said how do to me just yet. They're lovely people, aren't they? But they're just a little stiff. In Johnsonville, we say how do to strangers, and we put them in the locals when they come. We entertain them and we visit with them so they don't feel lonely, hardly none at all. Here it's different, isn't it?
You bet it is. Here it's just as different as can be. But say, you go ahead and write your other telegrams before we talk. I'll visit with you all you like when we get through.
Oh, will you? That's nice. My name is Maud Purcell. I'm up in B-15. I'd love to have you come upstairs and visit with me there. I brought a lot of pretty things I'd like to show you.
I'll come up. Just let me write this thing for you. Now, what's the name this message is going to?
It's Mr. Albert de la Martinelle, the Hotel Binghamton on 45th Street West.
I thought you didn't know a soul. This man's a New York man. He's got some fancy name. I'll bet you money he's some fancy kiddo, too.
He writes some awful fancy letters. Why, he's the one I've come to see. I missed him at the station. That's the reason I came here. Oh, he writes the grandest letters. You just ought to see him. Why, you'd fall in love with him yourself, I'm sure. He's writing me for 4 months now.
She fumbled in the fancy bag which hung upon her arm and brought to view a handkerchief, a bunch of keys, a memorandum book and change, and all the other futile incidentals to a woman's purse. And then, at last, she fished a letter out.
I met him in a New York paper. The time when he was looking for a secretary. And I answered, just for fun at first. Here, just look here. Read this. It's the last he sent. You tell me if it isn't downright sweet.
Dear Miss Purcell, it's almost foolish
to address you by that formal title when it seems I've known you since the world began. Your letters show so much of your sweet, charming, unsophisticated self. I simply can't wait to see you in the flesh. Of course, it must be irksome for a girl like you to live in such a limited environment like Johnsonville, Ohio. But since you're possessed of means and free to come and go, I really cannot understand why you should wish to spend your life in any one-horse town. Why not come to the city? I should be delighted if you'd let me meet you at the station. Let me know when you arrive. Should you decide to stay in town, I'm sure my friendship will be all that anyone
could ask. Sincerely, Albert de la Martinelle.
Now, isn't that a perfect book? It's romance, every word of it.
It is. More than that, it's fairy tale.
I knew it. I felt it from the start. It's just too sweet. You know, I'm awful glad I met you. We're so much alike. I know that we could be the best of friends.
Of course. But what do you want to say to this young man?
That's just what I don't know. Why, I thought that when you offered help, you meant that you'd help me out with this. You see, I hardly know him but in letters, and I couldn't meet him at the station just because I saw so many men. And yet, I'd hate to wire and have him think that I was running after him, you know. You'd feel the same if you were I, now wouldn't you?
The operator leaned against the counter more for actual support than for the graceful, studied attitude she usually affected.
Mean to tell me that you've come 1,000 miles to meet a man and then back out for fear he'll think you're anxious?
Why, certainly. He might think that way, mightn't he? Oh, I know you must be awful smart to hold this big position, so if you will tell me that he mightn't think that way, I'll telegraph him in a minute.
Listen, girl, listen now and get this straight. This Albert de la Martinelle looks anything but good to me. So take my tip and go on home. I'm dead sure he simply can't be worth your while.
Not worth my while? How can you say that? You know a man just couldn't well be anything but good to write the letters that he does.
I really hate to do this thing to you, but, Kitty dear, you're running loose. You're much too nice and sweet and good to go on building castles in the air around a man like this here Albert de la Martinelle. He doesn't want you for a secretary, and he doesn't want to marry you. Now, do you understand? How can I say this so you understand? He's nothing but a dancing chappy, or he's maybe something worse. He lives off women who have money. New York town is full of men like that.
It is?
It is. Oh, excuse me a moment. Sorry, kiddo. I can't talk anymore because I'm busy now. But if you wait for me at 12 o'clock, I'll come up to your room and I'll tell you all I know. I leave this desk at 12, and in the meantime, I'll look up Albert de la Martinelle and phone for him to call. That ought to fill the bill.
Oh, thank you.
Nell. But not now. Not now. You save the gab. I'm awfully busy. But be sure to wait for me at 12, and then I'll do the rest.
She watched the girl lose herself among the lobby crowd. That lobby crowd was thinning out, for music from the dining room had sounded invitations to the feast, and lights outside were claiming all their own. And then she copied on without a break until the house detective, bored and discontented, came to pick up threads of former conversations.
Who's your friend? Lengthy confab, what? I think she's pretty young to travel around alone.
She's Miss Purcell from Johnsonville, Ohio, Tom. And I'm a guest of hers in B-15 tonight. We're going to have a visitor, unless I'm very much mistaken. Hunt me up a phone book, will you, boy? And Tom, no interference, please, just for tonight. Well, out of my young life, you understand?
At 12, the lobby of the Hotel Blaine looks much the same as when the dinner crowd takes up its space, except that now the supper crowd foregathers. Shortly after 12, a man walked boldly through and made his unmolested way into the harbor of an elevator. Not in solitude alone lies safety for the hunted. This man's gray-streaked hair was plastered straight back from his narrow forehead, and his eyes, though small, yet seemed to take in everything at once. Outside the door of B-15, he paused to smooth his plastered hair. He hitched a faultless-fitting coat. He touched his tie, and then he tapped upon the door and was admitted. Miss McNulty stood against the sharp edge of the writing table in a room where one small oaken bed with matching chairs showed charmingly against the blue and green of an old Persian rug.
How do?
How do?
Then he paused and fixed the girl with one long stare of incredulity and plain chagrin. That look swept up and down before it came to rest upon her face.
You're Maud Purcell? You, why, I never in the world expected anything like this.
I'm Maud Purcell.
No wonder you got by me at the station. That skirt hiked up above your waist, that fancy haircut on your forehead. You're no more country girl than I'm a farmer's yap, you pavement bird.
You mean to say
I that- know. I pick your kind out in the dark. I see the reason why you wouldn't send your fizz ahead. A nice layout you picked for yourself. Say, wouldn't I be green to fall for anything like this?
Well, you think
Oh, can the play. Tell me straight now, what's your game?
My game? What's yours, I'd like to know?
You never mind me, kid. Just talk about yourself. You can't fool me with such a spiel.
You're awful smart.
As smart as you. But you're dead wrong this trip. Your play is easy money.
Ain't it yours?
His lips drew back, exposing his white, even teeth to sudden, savage snarl.
You let my game alone. You're some slick operator, babe, but shy the makeup. Take my tip. You don't look the part. I'd pick you out a mile away for what you are.
Miss Nell McNulty left her place against the writing table's edge and moved up closer to the man, her eyes aflame, her face as white as her white waist.
You've said enough. Get out, or else I'm gonna...
You gutter snipe, what can you do?
Be careful, I have letters.
Frame 'em. Would you stand a show in court?
You rat! You sleek gray parlor rat!
He glared. She snatched the telephone clear from the writing table, but in barely half a moment he sprang right across the room and tore it from her grasp. He pinned her arms close to her sides as, all unheeded, the receiver fell and dangled down, its sound lost in the muffler of the thick, soft Persian rug.
You'll call? You'll call and have me pinched, you cheap come-on, for some big easy money cad? I'll snap your head right off your spine if you let out just one peep. Now, let me hear you holler.
Then he flung her off. She fell against the footrail of the bed, her hair half tumbling down, her hands up to her throat. And then, through half-closed eyes, she flashed a glance of relief across the room. The fellow saw. He whirled. He made a leap. He met halfway the house detective's small revolver pressing tight against his side, and Dillon backed his prisoner up with savage, deadly mien.
Some nerve you got to show yourself in here. You know we're after you for months. The slickest foxtrot kid in 7 states you are, my boy. But now you've played your last foxtrotting trick. You'll foxtrot to a nice snug corner of the jug, you will. Come on, watch your step. You're dancing on with me.
With hair disordered, coat and tie awry, the fellow flashed his shifty eyes into the plain clothes man's.
You take her, too. She tried to job me here.
She did.
She did. She did.
You're full of soup.
Who is the baby? Where does she belong?
She's in the house, see? Another word from you, I'll knock you clean from underneath your hat. Step lively now.
He jammed his bit of blue steel closer to this man.
I said you're moving on with me, I did.
Thank you. Alone at last, Miss Nell McNulty smoothed her rumpled hair, then with tremors in her knees, she walked up to the bathroom door and went inside. There, Miss Purcell, her head lost in the towels, leaned against the nickel of the rack in shaking, palpitating fright.
Oh, has he gone? Has he gone? That awful man! I'll never be so foolish in a million years again. Oh, I wish that I was home. Oh, dear, I do wish I was home.
Yes, he's gone. Now, you're safe. You go to bed.
I can't. I'm nervous. Please stay here tonight. I'm so unstrung. I feel that I could scream.
All right, I'll stay. Don't cry. Here, sit down and I'll brush your hair.
She drew the youngster back into the bedroom. There she gathered up the loose strands of her hair, pulled out the few remaining pins, and shook all down. She plaited it in two long braids. She helped the other girl to do the same, and then undressed, she switched the lights out, crept into bed. But in the dark, the younger girl's sobs persisted, ending always with the homesick moan.
Oh, I wish that I was home. Oh, dear, I do wish that I was home.
Just go to sleep. You need the rest. I have to be downstairs at 2 o'clock again. That's right. Just you go to sleep.
At 2 p.m., the lobby of the Hotel Blaine is wrapped in soft gray light. The gold reflections from the sun are shadow-flecked. Across her counter, Miss McNulty leaned with chin sunk in her hands as Dylan, fresh and wide awake, advanced to greet her. Then she lifted up her drowsy head and yawned.
Oh, I didn't sleep a wink because I had to see that youngster to an awful early train. Tom, I'm trying yet to figure out how you happened in last night.
Well, I saw the guy go up and spotted him for what he was. And when you lifted up the telephone, the switchboard got the flash. They couldn't raise you there in B-15. That's why the switchboard girl gave me the dope.
Well, anyway, I'm glad you came in time. That guy, he would have beat me up, that's sure.
She stared out straight ahead. A weight of something else besides her sleep within her eyes.
Tom, how do I size up to you?
You're fishing. You know you look darn good.
Darn good, but just a little tough, eh, boy?
You tough? Stop kidding me.
You mean to say I don't look tough with this here little skirt and with my hair cut this way in the bangs? You really mean to say I don't?
You know right well you don't. You know I'm ready any time you'll listen. ready on the jump to tell you what I think about you.
But are you sure I don't look tough? You sure?
Sure, I'm sure. But let me look a little closer. Say, dames come in here with diamonds and with furs, and they look tough just the same. But you, you're just a plain-dressed, self-supporting, self-reliant kid. That's what you are. And that's just how you look.
She thanked him with a smile which showed her even teeth. And Dylan, seeing, comprehended.
Oh, now you put me off my cable, Nell. I came to tell you that the Hotel Men's Association offered up a nice reward for that gray parlor rat. You're falling heir to 150 small potatoes. Bunch of small change, kiddo. What?
Oh, boy, that's swell. Oh, that should get me a wardrobe to soften me up all right. Then maybe some good-looking guy.
Whenever you say, Miss McNulty. Dinner. On you, of course.
Of course. See how soft I am. On you.
And with that, we leave the dangerous dancing streets of the big city and return you to our KBIA studios, where Maplewood Barn radio players have just told you about Dave Collins' adaptation of Suzanne Buck's cautionary tale, Said the Spider to the Fly. Maggie Henson was our storyteller. Amy Humphrey was the brave Nell McNulty, and Kelly Moore, the helpless Maud. Joe Hayes was the heroic Detective Dylan, and Joe Bogue, the hateful Martinelle. This show was engineered by Darren Halwidge, with post-production by Amy Humphrey and Joe Hayes of the band Clatter. This is your announcer, Byron Scott, hoping you'll join us again next week, right here on KBIA. Before we let you go, here's a reminder to include the outdoor season at Maplewood Barn Theater in your summer plans. This year's first production is Agatha Christie's gripping courtroom drama, Witness for the Prosecution. Opening May 1st at the Big Red Barn in Nifong Park and running the first two weekends in May. There won't be any rainouts this spring. The set is constructed to move easily indoors in case of bad weather. The remainder of Maplewood's 42nd outdoor season includes five other shows. Nonsense 2 later in May and in June, Adam's Eve in July, Shakespeare's Julius Caesar in late July and early August, and the rollicking mystery musical Something's Afoot in late August and early September. For details, consult the MaplewoodBarnTheater.com website. We'll be seeing you soon at Mid-Missouri's only outdoor theater.